You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 1, Episode 8 of Cawley's Call, brought to you in sponsorship with Benetti Menswear, and we're very grateful for that sponsorship. With me, as usual, is Mr. Stewie Byrne. Good evening, Stewie. How are you?
I'm good, Alan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, yeah. And John O'Sullivan, how are you, John?
I'm good. Alan, yourself?
Good. I'm good, John, yeah. I suppose like most weeks in Irish football, there's always a few talking points and we've plenty to get our teeth into. But this week, and as we had a little laugh and a joke about it last week, about a week being a long time in football and a long time in politics, Joe, we could make three podcasts tonight. We could do a sports one, we could do a political one, we could do anything we want, and how we're going to cram it all into an hour, because we've been involved in Irish football for a long time, Stu, and obviously there's lots of controversies and different things has gone on over the years, but this week seems even more extraordinary to me, all the stuff that has gone on, and even right up to the moment that we're recording now, all the speculation about Dundalk's new manager. What has it been like this week?
Yeah, it's been really crazy, I have to say. Just obviously so looking forward to the game on Wednesday night, and really felt that Dundalk had an opportunity, you know, to go through. Even covering the game and watching the game and seeing how they played in the game, you felt, you know what, this is kind of as good as I've seen them all season. They looked like they had a little bit of a pep in their step, and I was really expecting them to kind of go from strength to strength within the game and get something from it. But then, you know, as has been the case all season, the wheels just came off. They just came off catastrophically. Mm. I really felt for them. I really did. I genuinely was upset. It was nearly upsetting to commentate on, to watch. I drove home in the height of it, at the absolute height of it, because I can't remember the last time I've seen a game like that, where like people would look back thinking, Dundalk got hammered 3-0, whatever, got beaten by the better side, all this kind of stuff. But really, in reality, what had happened was they just caused themselves all sorts of problems.
Just indicative of what we've seen up to this point.
But this was like at a different level altogether, I thought. I just thought it was just it was really difficult to watch. Genuinely really, really difficult to watch, and very difficult to put any kind of any sense on it as well. Like, you know, when you're commentating on stuff like that, you try to, as the supposed expert, you're trying to put some sort of sense on it, and you kind of allude to maybe similar situations you had as a player where things like this would have happened, but not to that extent. It just, they could have been there till midnight and they wouldn't have scored. Mm. And if the game had gone on for another half an hour, it probably could have been 6-0.
Mm. It was heading that way.
And that just wasn't the way the game played out.
No, it wasn't,
you know,
a reflection.
The possession figures were crazy, and I don't know, I'm still scratching my head, to be quite honest.
John, the week in Irish football, summarise it for us, please, in a few words, if you can.
it's nuts. I look just building on what Stewie said there. Like, that was actually the best I've seen Dundalk play, certainly since the return. And it didn't feel like a 3-0 game, but like Stewie said, the headline's going to be Dundalk lost 3-0, another Irish calamity in Europe, and whatever else you have. But then, obviously, the big story probably building on from that was Vinnie Perth. Mm. Parting ways with Dundalk, which, like, going back to what we said last week, I didn't think he was going to be under pressure, didn't think he was in danger, even with a poor European result. So I was shocked, to be honest, when Dundalk let him go. And even more shocked now with, I'm sure we'll get to it in a while, but what seems to be coming in to replace him after afterwards. It's just been, it was a bizarre week, absolutely bizarre. And like you said, tough to fill or tough to limit it all to an hour tonight.
Yeah, we're going to plenty talk about it. And I want to get into all of those stories, but we're going to do it in the pattern that they've all occurred over the week. So obviously the match, Shuey, as you said, we were really looking forward to the match. We gave them a great chance in terms of the opposition that they were playing, NK Sjeltsja. It wasn't like they had any brilliant European pedigree. And I suppose the way the match panned out, as you alluded to there in your little summary, was Dundalk really, they did shoot themselves in the foot, Stu. And will they ever have a better opportunity of going through a first round Champions League match? Because for all the years that we were involved in games or watching games in recent times in Europe, the opposition were as limited as I've seen at that level in a long, long time.
Yeah, they didn't. I had a chance. Obviously, I was doing commentary for it, so I had to kind of had a look back at some of the previous games they played. So I had a look at the Olympia Ljubljana game, which they played 4 weeks previous. That was a 2-2 draw that won them the league effectively. And I had a good look at them. And I have to say, I quite liked them. I quite liked them from what I saw. Ljubljana would be a very physical team, whereas I felt Sjeltsja were quite a very dynamic side. Looked like they had a good attitude about them. Like weren't overly physical at all. And for that league now, that's quite strange because that tends to be a league that's dominated by more physical sides. But they had a really good nature about them, you know. Just looking at them from that point of view, I was saying, you know, these could be a threat. These really could be a threat if they play their game and they don't get involved in any nitty gritty stuff. They could be a threat, and certainly with the four players they had up front, they can be a threat because they are very attack minded. But ultimately, you have to kind of judge a game on what you're seeing in the 90 minutes. So, and what I seen was. First 10 minutes probably very, very equal, but then Dundalk got a real foothold in it, started to really play their stuff, some lovely passages of play, and you can see Sjeltsja then started to get a little bit nervous, then started to stand off a little bit, give them a little bit of respect, and you're thinking now is the time to capitalise on that. I need a couple of half chances, and they were knocking on the door without really, really threatening. I think final third quality is not there at the moment, definitely not there, but I just didn't see the goal happening the way at the time it happened. It didn't come at a period where Sjeltsja had any kind of possession in the game. It came actually at a period when Dundalk were probably on top. Now there had been a couple of signs where Dundalk needed to be very, very careful, you know, concentration levels at the back. They were doing a couple of little silly things, and maybe the warning signs were there. But when you look back at the goal again,
the first goal.
I mean, you have to be disappointed with Gartland for not reacting, didn't get his feet right. You have to be disappointed with Gary. He should have saved it. There's no doubt about it. Should have saved it. Kieran has hardly touched it. And, you know, that's a comfortable save to him on any other day of the week. But you have to give credit to Kieran again. Look at him again. Like, you know, the anticipation that he's either Gartland's going to make a mistake or he's going to get in here is brilliant. Like, it really is. But it's just a goal. I think if it happened 9 times out of 10, you're gonna deal with 9 times out of 10. Yeah, one you're gonna let it go. But
I felt watching the game, Gartland was at fault. But I said it in afterwards in the analysis. I felt Gary. We always talk about big moments in games and the players bailing you out in terms of a creative player creating a moment of magic, a goal scorer getting you that goal or whatever. Sometimes in Europe, particularly in Europe more so than maybe domestically, you need your goalkeeper. He's going to be called into action to come up with that big save, that big moment. I was disappointed with Gary in that regard. I felt he could have bailed Gartland out. Once they went one down, I was disappointed at half time, but I felt that in the second half they showed a really good reaction. Came out, they were dominating the second half, as you said, Stu, about creating a couple of chances. Hubin's one hits the post, and I genuinely felt watching the game, I wasn't all that concerned. I felt they were going to score, but the one worry I had was obviously them conceding, because once you concede as you're pushing forward, it's game over. Then when Vinny started to make the substitutions, I got more worried and more concerned. And I understand you're chasing the game and it's the one-off tie and it's all that kind of stuff, but I remember after about 84 minutes and all the substitutions were on, they broke away and they could have scored, and that would have been game over. And it was kamikaze stuff what was going on with Dundalk, almost desperation. And I felt not only was there 6 minutes left, there was probably another 4 or 5 minutes going to be added on. So you're looking at the guts of 10, 11 minutes. And we referenced here, you, it was your point that you made, Stu, and John backed you up on it, about Shamrock Rovers the night up in Derry. Yet they kept to their principles, they kept playing, they kept probing. There was no mad stuff, there was no mad desperation stuff. They just kept doing the right things and eventually the goals will come. I felt Dundalk went away from all that. And ultimately they paid the price with the breakaway goal, because prior to that, there was the 4-1 that they made a mess of, Shelcha. Then they scored with 88 minutes, the game was over then. So I was disappointed in that regard. And I was even more disappointed then looking back, because as I say, it's a massive opportunity. And if we're ever going to progress the league here and move it on, and I know we're judged by the European stuff, that's a poor result. Let's call a spade, that's a poor result. Like, our champions should be beating NK Shelcha of what we saw the other night in that match.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Like, and that's the one thing that I came away from. I drove home in the height of it, just because it's just another opportunity for people to say that it isn't good enough, the standards aren't there. It was live on RTE, you know, a lot of people would have tuned in to watch it, high expectation. And it's very, very frustrating to kind of, and very difficult to put any kind of sense on it. But ultimately, you can't be conceding the goals they're conceding and there not be something wrong. Like, you know, so
you mean off the field stuff?
I mean, it seems to be everything. Yeah, yeah, it just seems to be everything.
We're going to get into all
off
that
the field stuff. You can't be conceding the goal. I mean, it's hard to kind of, it's hard to kick someone when they're down as badly as that. But you know, if you're honest with yourself, you have to look at the goals you conceded, and you have to look at the goals you've conceded all season.
And you've conceded 12 in the league now, and that was another 3 the other night. John, your thoughts on the game the other night? Are we being hard on Dundalk? Are we right? How did you see the game?
No, look, I wouldn't add much more to what you said there. I think you got it perfectly. The only thing I might add is that when you're discussing thinking with your principles, I thought Chris Shields was having an absolute stormer, and I thought every time Shelcha looked like breaking, he was the one mopping up, he was the one starting the talk again, and he was the one that was keeping the tempo, pushing them forward. He went off, I think they lost that completely, and I even remarked about it at the time. I found that a very strange substitution, and then it really was like again a kick and rush after that, you know, and it lost all kind of structure, and I wasn't surprised in the end. As good as Dundalk were at times, considering the final result, it wasn't a surprise when they did get caught.
Yeah, because the Flores one I could understand. You have two sitting players, you take him off, you're gambling at that stage, whatever. Once Shields came off, it reminded me of the night Martin O'Neill made the substitutions at half time in the playoff game, and he took the whole heart and centre of the midfield out of that area against Denmark, and we got absolutely destroyed in the second half. It was something similar to that when he took Shields and Flores off.
Yeah, I don't think there should ever be a situation, you know, or it's very rare you have a situation where there's certain players you just don't take off because they bring certain, you know, so much to the table. I think Shields is one of them players. I think he's got, and he's the skipper as well. I don't know whether he was worried about the yellow card issue or because he did he got booked in the second half, and there was a couple of little chances where he nearly got caught again for a book, and I don't know whether he was worried about that. Maybe that was the case, but I don't think he should have brought Shields off. But ultimately, it's funny when you look at all the troubles that Dundalk have at the moment. Okay, defensively is very poor. They're not creating much either, or if they are creating anything, they're finishing is sloppy. It's poor. But you think, you know, they've got such a strong bench that, you know, when they bring players on, they can make a difference. But that isn't even happening. The bench isn't making a difference. Didn't make a difference the other night, and it hasn't made a difference in any of the subsequent games
and
either.
It's a good point, Hugh, because they made 5 substitutions against Waterford the previous week, and they made the other 5 the other night, I think. And as you said, it's not making much of a difference, the lads are bringing off the bench.
No, so it really just leads you to believe that just psychologically, mentally, they're not at it. They're just not. They're in a bad place. They're in a really bad place. Like, I know we were given last week's show, we were giving them the opportunity that they're still in this, still a lot
no,
to play
you,
for. Which
you
they
and
were.
John, you and John,
yeah,
were.
We, which
I
we
was.
Were. But now they're in danger of completely falling down this table because.
And that's something I wanted to raise with, and John as well, because we often see on Twitter and plenty of lads, well, loads of lads, obviously, to comment on the league and this, that, and the other, and there's some more prominent than others. And I would have seen an awful lot in the last probably the last maybe year, John, 18 months since Dundalk's success, about how this is it now. We might as well give up. Dundalk have all the money, of this, that and the other. Everybody else is playing catch up. And I've even seen kind of prominent people at different clubs, chairman, all sorts commenting on it almost. It just goes to show how quickly, John, things can unravel.
Yeah, no, look, I think I said it a couple of weeks ago. Success is always cyclical. No matter how much money someone throws into it, you'll always have a situation where there'll be seasons when you, for whatever reason, you're fading. Rovers look like they're a club that are going to be in the ascendancy for the next couple of years. It's one of the things that when people talk about Cork City and potential takeovers down there, I kind of try and re-emphasise that, look, the Cork City will get another turnaround. These things come in cycles. But I think it's how rapidly Dundalk have fallen back is the real question, or is the real thing to discuss. And like, there's obviously something going on fundamentally at the club that should be probed, or that I know from speaking to Dundalk fans myself that they're worried about the club beyond what's going on the 90 minutes on the pitch. And I think there's the sacking of Vinnie Perth after the game at the weekend, after the game last week, is raising questions about Peak Six, the ownership, and exactly what's going on there. And I think people are starting to get a bit worried up in Louth at the moment.
That's it, Stewie. So we get to, obviously, the game's over. I felt as though John, I think it was John that said it last week, he didn't feel Vinny was under any pressure. I don't think you did either. I didn't think he was. The only thing that worried me slightly was the manner in the recent results and the way the game transpired against Waterford. I felt if they went out with something similar in the European game and almost went out on a whimper, he might be in bother. That was just my general feeling. I didn't think that was the case when I left RTE the other night after doing the match. I didn't think for a second that, oh, well, Vinny will be gone. Sitting at home Thursday night, next thing the news is breaking left, right and centre. Were you taken by a surprise as all of us, or did you see it coming? And here's the next one. Is it the right decision?
So you can never be surprised by anything in football. That's the first thing, right? You know, realistically, you can never be surprised. But I have to say, I didn't see it coming. No, I didn't. I think it's the wrong decision. Okay. I do. I think it's the wrong decision. I think it's too short a season to be doing stuff like this. If you're going to do it, maybe do it in the off season and you do it the right way. But I think the way they've done it now is they've heaped pressure on a team that is now in trouble. And they don't have anybody lined up to replace him, which I find bizarre. Completely bizarre.
Well, according to reports today, and it's literally news is breaking left, right and centre, there is somebody lined up by the name of Filippo Givagnoli, an Italian lad, Stu, that nobody knows any about. Because all over the weekend we heard rumours of Robbie Keane's name mentioned. We heard all sorts of names being mentioned. I felt from chatting to you that we both thought someone must be lined up.
Yeah.
Obviously that's not the case. But then we hear today that this could be imminent disappointment. Some lad who has no experience in terms of management. He was running AC Milan summer camps from what we're hearing. He did have a playing career of, I think, 18 years at lower league level. But he was director of coaching of Metropolitan Oval Academy in New York. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it's speculation. Maybe it's
apparently this is imminent.
Maybe it's significant enough. I just think that I don't think they should have sacked Vinny. I really don't. I don't think they should have. I think they should have stuck with him. Sometimes it's the braver decision is actually to stick by the manager and at least try and get through this period, which is a very, very short period of time.
And they still have a Europa League.
They still have a Europa League game to play, exactly. Yeah. And they were still in the league.
Yeah.
They're out of it now. Mm. They're out after the result on Saturday. But I just think it was the wrong thing. I've got a theory on Dundalk, and it might be harsh.
Go for it, Stuart.
I put this to Stephen Kenny a couple of years ago, and I think it's to do, an awful lot of it is to do with the environment in which the players are in. And first of all, let's get one thing straight. They've a top-notch squad, okay, that have not wanted for nothing. Not wanted for nothing. The development they've done in the training facility is outstanding, absolutely outstanding. But, and here's the but, as a player, okay, you you have ambitions to play at the top level and to be as good as you can play, and the environment has to be right for that, you know, for you to be able to adhere to those ambitions. Okay, training is top notch. The ground is a huge problem. It is just a huge problem. You know, if you're playing in that ground week as a player, there's only so much I could play there. I genuinely could. I had a similar situation at Drogheda, and top-notch training facilities, but the ground was tiny. The dressing rooms were a disgrace, and ultimately, it tends to be a reminder that
we're not moving.
For all the work this football club has done, for everything we have achieved on the pitch, and I have to reiterate that everything they've achieved on the pitch and the inspiration they've been to the current crop of League of Ireland players that are there, outstanding, absolutely fantastic, they still haven't moved forward.
No.
You know, and that's the environment that the players are in. That's the environment that everybody's in. And I did actually ask Stephen Kenny about this about 3 years ago. I said, do you worry about, you know, the ground and the environment moving on in order to progress? And to be honest, I think he worried about it as well. It was something that was on his mind.
So is that John, would you go along?
You have to be able to attract players, Alan. Like, you know, and the ground is a problem to me.
But the ground has been a problem, Stu, for as long as
you're not going to attract. If you want to go out and get better players, you know, and let's be honest, you have to go beyond Ireland. You do.
So if you're walking into Tala tomorrow as a player, you're impressed straight away. Look at the playing ground.
That's exactly that's the environment the players are in. Yeah.
You walk into Oriel Park and you're like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I have to be harsh about it, because the training ground is absolutely outstanding, but. And you ploy your trade on the pitch.
And the pitch is another problem. I was up there last Friday watching the match, and I'm not making excuses for the performances based on the pitch, but the pitch hinders them and holds
them. Pitch is costing them, yeah.
John, I suppose there's a lot in that there. Can we go back to your thoughts on Vinny? The right decision, the wrong decision, how badly was it handled? I'll give you my thoughts on it then, but I also want your view on Stewie's theory.
Okay. lot there. I think it's the wrong decision. I think after 5 years as assistant manager and then just over a year in very strange circumstances with broken seasons, COVID and everything else, I think it's a bizarre decision. I don't want to dwell too much on Filippo Giovagnoli, who reportedly is coming in, but what's been reported today is that he's going to meet players and staff tomorrow. And where I have a problem with that is this is a fellow that staff come over from the States. So if he is going to meet players and staff tomorrow, that must mean that he's already been in the country 14 days. So this looks like it potentially is a strategic decision made by Peak Six before the result of the Champions League game was known at all. Mm. And if that's the case, and you're looking at, like, I was looking up Metropolitan Oval today. They're basically a school kids football club in New York. They have, in American terms, they've been around a long time, 80 odd years. They have promoted players to the MLS, to New York City FC and to New York Red Bulls. But it is a pay-per-play academy. They have kids from under 6 up to under 19s. They're all paying about $3,000 a year up front to play for this club that's promising to progress them. So for me, with the American link, if this guy is who's coming in, this says to me that this is more about kind of a process of getting American players into Europe, like we saw with Alfonso Davies coming out of the MLS, the Vancouver Whitecaps, and ended up playing in Bayern Munich and winning the Champions League last night. I think it's a business decision rather than a footballing decision if this is the guy that's coming in to replace Vinny. And just on top of that, then there's a journalist in Cork, Dylan O'Connell, who tweeted today. He was sent an application or a job search form from a coach at Real Madrid's Academy for a League of Ireland job. And the closing date for application for that was the 20th of July 2020. And the salary that was being offered in that, there's only a couple of clubs in Ireland that could afford it, and Dundalk are one. Now, it might not have been related to Dundalk, but it looks like Peak Six have taken a decision a long time ago to replace Vinny, regardless of how the results are going to go. And it's based on business rather than football. And now to come around to us, sorry.
Where have you been hiding all this, John? Hey,
John? Colombo, you're like Colombo, John.
have you got a no, Mac on, have you?
Yeah. Just wait holy one Lord. Second. But coming back then to what Stewie says about the ground, this goes back to, and this is repeatedly coming up with Dundalk fans about why they're concerned about Vinnie Perth's sacking, is because now they're going, hang on, what are peak six in this form? Mm. And it goes back to the same thing. I agree completely with Stuart about what you want to show people when they come to the ground. I worked with a couple of clubs around Ireland, and obviously Cork City, my club. There's a big difference between bringing someone into Turner's Cross and saying this is where you'll be playing, and bringing someone into the Markets Field or Jackman Park, as it was with Limerick, and saying this will be where you're playing. Mm. And the fact that Peak Six have not, I know there's ownership issues and there's a lot in the background around Oriel Park and all that, but the fact that Peak Six haven't gone out and pushed forward the stadium in the same way they've pushed forward those aspects of the club that would be developing players, bringing players through, selling you as a stepping stone for potentially an American player coming through, might be coming through to the MLS. That's, I think, what we're seeing, that the Peak Six model is now, we're switching about. With Brexit coming, with global football the way it is, Ireland is an avenue into Europe, a stepping stone for US collegiate athletes, and that's what Peak Six's game is. That's my theory on Dundalk right now.
Well, that's a good one, John.
You
sold me.
Yeah, absolutely, John, on both things as well, not just with the Peak Six stuff, but also... the ground, the business thing, but it wasn't that what they were always here for? Because I remember going back when they did arrive in Dundalk, fans were obviously questioning about doing up the ground. It was probably pie in the sky stuff to think they were going to come in and build them a new stadium. I never expected that. But show some sort of plan or structure that maybe this is what we're thinking a year, 2 years down the line. That was never, ever in the offing, Stu. I always felt, anytime I've been asked to comment on Dundalk since they've been involved, I always felt they were here for one thing and one thing only, and that was progression through Europe. All the more reason why when they failed the other night that you're thinking Vinny, his days might be numbered. But when you go back through, like John's theory there, and even there was mentions on Twitter the other night of some other lad, Mark Burton, had come in, part of the Peak Six group as well, and maybe was he undermining things. I think they're ready now just to take control and do it their own way. Vinny was probably well placed and the obvious one in terms of when Stephen left, he had to take over as such. They've given him that time. It was probably hard, regardless of their thoughts or what they wanted to do with the football club last year. Vinny was successful and they had to stick with him. This year it hasn't been the same, and they've probably grasped that opportunity now, or this was probably always, as John says, maybe in the thinking, just waiting for this chance to do it. And here they are, and they're just going to take control of this. Now, if this fella comes in, yeah, God only knows, but that's what it's looking like at the moment.
Well, there's two things in that. I've never, like, there's two ways you can effectively be a feeder club. Okay, that's what we're talking about. There's two ways you can do this. You can actually genuinely try to progress and bring in young players, and then every season, so you might offload one player that you brought in that you developed, sell them for a good fee, that will help feed back into the team again, and you know, year on year, and that's what a lot of clubs do that, and no problem with that at all. I have a serious problem with the other, and the other is that you are strategically positioning yourself as effectively a middleman for what is, for want of a better phrase, the mass movement of players from one continent to another. Mm. Like, you know, there are other phrases for that. Mm.
Yeah.
But I have a huge problem with that.
We've only started this podcast. Don't get me in trouble.
I have a huge problem with that theory. Dundalk as a town needs that football club.
Absolutely. And look what it's done for it over the last three or four years, even prior to
needs that football club. That a town that's been, you know, that's been through a very, very, very difficult period employment wise, when you look at the likes of eBay and Xerox that came in and went again. That football club has been nothing but a godsend to them. I'd be hugely uncomfortable if that was the case.
John, yeah, would you echo those concerns as well?
And I think a couple of months ago there was a touted. I know Cabo or Kevin Teely were talking about an offer that was made to them, by another American gentleman who I actually spoke to on a couple of occasions when he was looking for a club in Ireland. And from what I've seen from conversations with him and from what I've seen in the in what Cabo are putting to their own members, there seems to be a heavy emphasis there again on bringing American players over to Ireland and using clubs here as a stepping stone onto Europe. And there's a number of reasons for that. Our work permit structure, how cheap it is, the rules about in Ireland versus the UK, the rules about sports professionals' work permits are slightly different. So while in the UK you might have to have reached a certain level, or you might have to be playing underage with your country, things like that, the same doesn't apply in Ireland. So I would be worried that being a relatively poor league in financial terms, we are quite open to people who might see this as a strategic business opportunity.
And money is the root of all evil, Stu. I've always said it.
Especially in this game, yeah.
I've always said it. And when you outline things like that and the theories that yourself and John have put forward, and this is what they're here for, let's be honest. They're a hedge fund. They're only here for money. They're not here for the benefit of winning the Electricity League as such or whatever. They only see that as a route through to the Champions League and eventually go on and make money or whatever. I've never felt since the day they walked in that their heart was in the right place in terms of trying to benefit Dundalk as a town, as a city, put a new ground, all that kind of stuff, that they were in it for the long haul. And it's kind of been borne out this way now.
Yeah, we need to remember as well that Dundalk's success back in 2016 was nothing to do with Peak Six.
No, and that's what we're saying.
They did it themselves.
Yeah.
And now they're in danger now of going down a very, very dangerous road. And I hopefully our wonderful FAI are looking in on this now and with a keen eye, because this kind of crap cannot start. I'd walk away from the game if this shit started in this country. I really would. Like, you know, this league doesn't need this kind of stuff at this moment in time. There needs to be a real clear understanding about what's going on here, because otherwise I'd be very, very worried about the future of the game, to be quite honest.
Okay, well, we'll watch this with a lot of, I suppose, as we said last week, we just don't know what we could have in store next week by the time we come back and talk to you the way things are going at the moment. But the reports are that this man may be taking over. It'll be interesting to see if it's happening. There's talk of it happening tomorrow, the next day. As John said, it would leave you straight away to questions about where has he been, if he's arriving in Dundalk tomorrow. I don't know. We'll wait and see. But there was a lot of football played over the weekend as well, and we're going to get to that. Stewie, you were in Tallaght. Shamrock Rovers, the league leaders, slipping up again, 0-0 with Shelburne.
Yeah. The poor game, to be quite honest. It was always going to be the case that Shells were going to go there and effectively park the bus. Like, you know, really, really good defensive shape. But looking at the Shells the previous week against Derry, I felt that was their best performance of the season, in that they were really, really well set up. They were hungry. There was a real drive and desire about them, like, you know, which is, you know, baseline, to be quite honest. So they brought that again into the game during the night, and I felt they went a little bit more. Thought they were set out exactly what they wanted to do. Defensively, they were excellent to a man, and they really, really worked Rovers hard and made it very, very difficult for Shamrock Rovers to break them down, who could have been there till, you know, again, could have been there till 12 o'clock and just wouldn't have scored. It was just one of them nights for them, you know. I thought at times their passing and football was very, very good, but at times then it was a little bit too slow. A couple of players getting a little bit frustrated. So I don't know. Look, Shells made it very difficult for Rovers. Rovers just lacked a little bit something maybe up front. Aaron Green does a great job for them, but I think they need that other option. Yeah, I think they need that other option up front that's going to give them something different. Like, you know, there's so much movement throughout that midfield that there's players moving all over the place. They're going to cause you troubles, no doubt about it. But they just didn't have.
I didn't think they'd done enough, to be honest with you, on the night.
Yeah, didn't have enough on the night to do that. Now, in saying that, like, I understand, you know, just even from Michelle's point of view, you know, they're at a certain period in the club's history where they've come out of a very very difficult period, 10-year period, and out of that darkness, out of debt, they've come up from the first division, And I think they're now in a place where they just need to stay in the division, and they do what they did the other night, they certainly will, but there's no doubt about it.
It's a really good result for Shelburne.
Great result for Shelburne, but I would find it very, very difficult to watch Shells like that week in, week out.
I think
for next season, it needs to be, you know, there needs to be a different focus, which I think there will be. I think there will be.
Sure.
I think it's all about, it genuinely is all about just trying to
consolidate
what you have at the moment. But
well, we've said that a couple of times in the last couple of weeks on the podcast. I think that's all Shelburne need to do. They don't need to set themselves out with any mad, unrealistic targets, aiming for Europe, aiming too high, any of that stuff. Just stay in the division, stay in the league. And if that means going to the likes of Shamrock Rovers or going to the likes of Bohemians or Dundalk, the better teams, and sitting in and setting your stall out, I've no problem with that, and let them build from there, because that's the most important thing for them. It's actually mad that when you look at, bar the top two or three, I was only looking at it today, if you go Derry, Pat, Shelburne, Waterford, they're all sitting on the same number of points. They've all won the same amount of games. They've all drawn the same amount of games. They've all lost the same amount of games. Like, it's crazy how tight it is in terms of third down to eighth. You're talking 3 points.
Yeah, I think we spoke about it 2 weeks ago. We thought the table was starting to kind of develop a certain pattern. Now you can see some clubs were starting to drop, and some were starting to kind of move ahead. But it's all changed in the last few weeks, because in different results, the results are just so strange at the moment. You know, you see Sligo get turned over by Cork 3-0. Then they go and win, beat Dundalk 3-1. You know, Derry the same. Finn Harps, you know, turn it around. So there's all sorts. I mean, I think what it does tell you, and this is why Dundalk probably be kicking themselves, is that, you know, there's no consistency about the results at the moment. No. Anybody can turn anybody over at the moment, like, you know. So it makes it very interesting, but it's a very difficult one to call at the moment.
John, Cork City, 3-1 defeat in Derry. They took the lead really early, and you're probably thinking this is good. We're carrying on from the last couple of weeks, but ultimately they came unstuck in the second half, and Derry scored 3 goals.
Yeah, I suppose it was a poor game. Derry were well on top start to finish. I think we spoke in the last couple of weeks, Cork City keeping clean sheets. And I think losing Joseph Olawu so early in the first half with injury affected Cork City quite a bit. They had to rejig on the back four, pull Kevin O'Connor into the centre and put Ronan Hurley on. And while they kept Derry at bay for a while and got to half-time comfortably enough, look, Derry were always likely to peg it back. I suppose what's disappointing was the manner of the goals conceded. The 2 goals within 8 minutes of the restart were sloppy from Cork City's point of view, and you can't be making those kind of mistakes when you're, as Cork City are, as we speak, bottom of the table. And you have to try and, like Shells did against Shamrock Rovers, you have to try and be solid, be secure, maybe unspectacular, but keep things going. Derry backed off a little bit towards the end of the game. City got a bit into it, you know, but then got caught in the break late on. But overall, disappointing. But I suppose, look, I've said it before, Derry will be ahead of Cork City, really, regardless. The teams around them, probably the way things are going, it'll be Harps, Waterford. Sligo seem to be taking themselves out of it with 2 wins in a week. Disappointing for Cork City, but again, Derry aren't the bar for us, really. Games against Waterford, Harps, Shells and Sligo probably will be the ones that will define the season, really.
Okay, it's been an evening of theories, and here's my one on the league right now at this moment of time, Stu, okay?
Okay, drum roll.
Drum roll is right. Shamrock Rovers, they were disappointing the other night, but they're a good side, very good side. Bohemians doing unbelievable work. Keith Long, as you mentioned, they won again at the weekend. We'll get to that in a moment. Dundalk, the wheels have come off, as we know, but obviously they've been the flag bearers for the last number of seasons. After that, I think it's very, very average. And maybe this is a reason in terms of the results that we're having. You're mentioning everybody beating everyone. I think another thing that you can add into that on my little theory, I do think it's been poor, the standard, in a lot of the games that I've watched, and I've been disappointed with it. And I think when you add in the fact that they're playing in empty grounds at all different stagger times, I don't think that's helping the product on the pitch. Because when you strip it all back and you don't have that 2,000-3,000 under the floodlights in an evening and the atmosphere going, and that does, as a player, spur you on and get you going, and that's what we all look forward to. When you're playing at, and I'm not making excuses, I'm saying it straight out that I think it's been average in terms of the quality, but in defence maybe of some of the teams and the players, playing at 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock on a dry, sunny afternoons, that's not helping it in front of nobody as well. That may have a reason as to why we're seeing some crazy results and mad results and teams slipping up 1 week and winning the next week. But ultimately, I do think, bar the top two and possibly Dundalk, I think it's very, very ordinary, the league.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I don't think this COVID stuff doesn't help at all. Like, you know, I mean, I'm only thinking about myself. I mean, I'm going around with my head in the clouds, you know, to be quite honest with you at the moment. I genuinely am. It's very, very difficult just to live life. Life is very difficult at the moment. Now, you would think that getting the opportunity to get out in the pit.
Do you need me and John just take 2 minutes for you?
Like, yeah, we've got a violin. We've got a violin.
Are you okay? Do you need to tell us anything?
No, I'm good. You would think, right, that the players getting that opportunity to get out on the pitch for 90 minutes should be a huge relief, you know, from what is just a bizarre time in our lives, like, you know. And I suppose it isn't reflecting that way. I mean, it's just, there's so much, everything's up in the air, Alan. And the whole year's been up in the air. Everything is up in the air at the moment. And it can be difficult to get any kind of focus in your life. And it is important when you're a footballer that you do have that focus and you do have that consistency in your life. So it is difficult, but it's difficult for everybody. But I do agree. I think the quality is just not there at the moment. Funnily, I actually think Derry, of all the teams I've probably seen, have a lot of improvement in them. I think they could really, you know, it's going to be a very, very difficult place to go, the Brandywell. I think they're getting better and better now. Declan's starting to kind of find that sweet spot with the team. You know, we were talking about them earlier on in the season. You know, are they the kind of team that can, you know, maintain possession, or are they better off just sitting off? But I think he's definitely finding that balance. And so I would keep an eye on Derry. I think they can certainly cause a few problems for a lot of teams. But the way it is at the moment, it's just, you're never guaranteed any kind of results in the league, but you're just, it's very difficult to guarantee how one team is going to play 1 week to the next.
Like it's,
and that just adds to the chaos.
It's been incredible. John, am I being too hard? Where do you see, I suppose, the overall standard of what you've watched so far, or how the league is shaping up at the moment?
I broadly agree. I enjoyed the Waterford Harps game, and there was 4 late goals, but technically on the pitch it wasn't a great product. You probably would have had to have been a League of Ireland fan to be enjoying it as it went along. You know, there was excitement in it, but not necessarily a technically very good game. But actually what Stewie's raising there is actually kind of pops something into my head. I guess, like, you both played the game. We say if you're a professional footballer in Ireland now, and you're looking ahead, and with the uncertainty about COVID and everything, is there a possibility people or players are already, like, because they're only human, they're the same as the rest of us, you're looking out, it's a short season, come October, November, you don't know what's going to be there in terms of offers from clubs, are they going to be paring back? Is the chance of an injury now more serious than it might have been at another time, another year? Does things like that weigh in your mind, or is it a case that once you cross the white line, that goes out of your head?
Yeah, I think if you're worried about those things, it's all the more reason that you're trying to go out and impress and earn yourself a contract or put yourself in the shop window. That would be my take on that one, John. And I don't think that kind of covers over the fact that whether the quality is good or bad. I think what covers over that, maybe more so, that might have more of an impact is, as I said, the fact that there's no crowd and no atmosphere. And I think that sometimes can be difficult for players. I've experienced that myself, and going out and playing in front of nobody, that's hard to get going. And people might say, look, you're getting paid, you have to go out and do that. That's fine. But believe me, if you're playing in front of empty crowds and empty stadiums every week, I think that's more of a problem than a fella thinking, I'm not sure where I'm going to be in 3, 4, 5 months' time. I just think the overall standard right now at this moment in time, you're looking at the teams, and I include Dundalk even in that European fixture, it's just not there at the moment. I think it's been poor.
Yeah, I think there could be something in that, in what you said, actually, what John said. Now, obviously, players want to play, and they're playing for a contract every year, so they seem to be playing for a contract every 6 months, like, you know. But I think a certain age group of players might be looking at the situation now and saying, do I really want this anymore? Like, you know, is this what being a footballer is all about? And at the moment, it's not. unfortunately. It's not. I wanted to play football. I wanted to play in big crowds. I wanted to play in front of the... And it's not there at the moment. I mean, look, we all know why it's not there. There's an obvious reason. But if you're at a certain age, you could be looking at it now going, do I knock it on the head? I think it's certainly happening in the GAA. And it's not at all a bad thing to kind of, you know, footballers, especially in this country, will always have one eye on their next career. What am I going to do when this all finishes? Like, you know, but the inconsistency of all of this, we don't know. Like, we could be here in a year's time. It could be still the same situation.
Well, that's,
we just don't know, and that doesn't help.
But I don't know, Stu. But does that take away from the quality on the pitch of what we're watching at the moment?
I think it can play on the mind. It could certainly subconsciously play on the mind of a player.
Like, I'm watching games every week, and I'm saying to myself, like, is this the best we can offer at the moment? Maybe I'm being too harsh, I'm being too critical, I don't know. But I'm looking at games, and I'd love to hear, like, obviously people listening to the podcast, what you think. And I love the league more than anybody, and I want to see great games, but I'm just not seeing the games at a high enough standard that I think, in terms of us going forward and progressing. It'll be interesting to see the European games now this week, and what we're kind of gauging ourselves against on that level. Obviously we were disappointed with Dundalk, but of course Derry City are playing tomorrow against the Lithuanian team. I would fully expect them to beat the Lithuanian team, and they should be beating the Lithuanian team. Reiterate, they're bottom of the table in a 6-team league. Bohemians, I think, have a much tougher task against Fehervir. Their league is only after starting, and they've played 2, they've drawn 2. And Shamrock Rovers, I would fully expect to beat the team from Finland as well. So maybe it might be something we can come back to next week, but that's just my thoughts on it at the moment. We've gone off on a bit of a tangent there. I do want to get to the Bowes result, because Bowes have been a standout for me. Bowes have been brilliant, and have been brilliant for the last 2, 3, 4 years, and we've praised Keith Long enough. A lot of people were suggesting, Stu, even maybe Dundalk could go for Keith Long and Trevor Crawley. It'd be a much better partnership, in my opinion, and no disrespect to Filippo Giovanganoli. But that's where I'd be going if I was Pig Six and Bill Hull's here, man. But look, sure, that's for another day. But Bowes beating Pats 2-0 on Saturday, great result.
Yeah, great result. And again, another response to the situation they find themselves in, which is they're now, you know, expected to go and challenge Shamrock Rovers for a league title.
2 points behind, yeah, it's game on.
Simple as that, you know. And full credit to them. Now, it's still very early days, and there's a lot of football for them to play, but, you know...
The next match, the cup weekend next weekend, the next game they're playing Shamrock Rovers, we'll be building that up next week, we will, shoot.
There'll be drones and everything going over the pitch to really to watch that one. I say there'll be some crowd. But,
on the roof.
I'm going to admit something here. Would you believe this? I can't believe I'm going to say this, but every time I'm going to the games now, I watch the games, I'm still in my mind going, jeez, the crowd's terrible, isn't it? I can't get it out of my head, and then I have to remind myself.
But this COVID has really affected this man, John, isn't it? Well, I need to give him a hug now. Can I give him a hug?
But Bowes, look, it's really important. It's really important that they maintain the level that they're at the moment, because they're the league's greatest hope now of a real title challenge, like the Shamrock Rovers, and I'm sure they would have gotten a bit of confidence off the result the other night against Shells, that, you know, anything can happen in this league, and anything can happen in this league. So it's key for them that they respond to the kind of pressure, because there is a bit of pressure going
to
come on them.
Responding so far,
yeah, it's going to get even more difficult. And obviously Keith is going to, as his job as manager with young squad, is just to try and manage that expectation. Don't press the button just yet. When a certain time comes, it'll be time to go. But by all means, like, they're there on merit, they're there on credit, and I really hope that they embrace the situation that they're in and they just go for it.
Yeah, because that's interesting point, isn't it, John? The fact that nobody gave them a chance beforehand, whilst they're still in second position. I think that's the much better position for them to be in up until maybe the last 2 or 3 weeks, because all the pressure then will be on Shamrock Rovers, that they're the ones expected to go and win the league. They haven't done it in a long time. Everybody thought they were going to run away with it. Here you have Bowes chasing them down, their nearest rivals. If Bowes can stay in their coattails right up until a week or two in the season to go, I think that's going to be unbelievable for them in terms of all the pressure that's going to be on Shamrock Rovers then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, I don't think anybody at the start of the season would have thought that Bowes would have been splitting Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers this season. And it's a free hit for them in many ways. I mean, obviously, they will, as they get closer to the last few games of the season, and if they are still involved, the pressure will build on them, and then you're dealing with a different mindset about getting them over the line. Although I think Keith Long and Trevor Crowley are, you know, two men that'll, you know, get the squad and get the players right. But yeah, look, it's they're going out, they're very impressive. They probably should have beaten Pats by more at the weekend. They look like they're enjoying it. They look like they're a very solid unit. They're playing really good football, and they're definitely the form team in the league at the moment.
Brilliant. And defensively, they're rock solid. They've only conceded 4 goals. Best defensive record in the league. My team, Sligo Rovers, Stu, 3-1 against Dundalk. I didn't see this coming, but they've been on a really good run since the restart. That's 4 out of 5 matches they've won. They've moved themselves up to 4th in the position, albeit it's very tight. But this has been my argument with Sligo Rovers for the last 2-3 years. And I've had it out with fans and I've had it out with people. The resources and the budget that Sligo Rovers have, this is exactly where they should be. Because as I said to you, when we had Shamrock Rovers in Dundalk and then you had Bowes maybe, it was much of a muchness after that in terms of 4th maybe down to even 8th. And this is exactly the way the league has transpired again this year. You go from 3rd down to 8th, as I mentioned, you have 3 points between everybody at the moment. Sligo Rovers with the resources and the budget exactly where they should be pitching in 5th, 4th, whatever, up there challenging in those type of positions. I was never saying they should be winning leagues, they shouldn't be winning leagues, but they should certainly be challenging for that European position. When you see the likes of what Bowes have achieved, and when you see Derry with the turnover players last year, Declan Devine, and what he achieved in his first year getting 4th, Sligo Rovers right now are sitting in 4th and have a real opportunity if they can maintain it and keep it going. And the best thing about them at the moment, I think what's good for them, again, I go back to the crowd. I think there's no pressure on them when they play. Earlier when they had some of their home games, the crowd getting on their back, possibly when things weren't going well for them. They're playing in front of nobody, which suits them at the moment. And their front three looks very, very good and lively at the moment. And there's a boy, De Vries, has come in, scored at the weekend. He's done very, very well. We've often picked out Coughlin. But it's been good. It's been a good little run for Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, well, how did they play? I actually didn't see the Dundalk
game.
Well,
I only
saw the goals.
Now, Dundalk, to be fair, I think if Hoban scores the penalty, it might be a different story because Dundalk were kind of dominant at that stage. Again, I felt it was a mistake from Gary Rogers, the first goal, the free kick. It's goalkeeper side, the free kick goes in. Yeah. So that was his fault. And as I say, Hoban missed the penalty. After that, in the second half, then Sligo Rovers, they got the second goal and kicked on. Again, you could say it was a bit of a mistake. The third goal, Gary maybe should have come out and claimed it. But all in all, it was a really, really good result for Sligo Rovers and carrying on their good form from where they picked off last week.
Yeah, well, obviously, key for them is really consistency, I suppose, more than anything. Like, you know, that they, you know, they are a full-time outfit. They have, you know, again,
this is
we
my
talk,
point,
talk
you,
about
you know?
The environment that that you're playing as a footballer. It's a great place to play as a footballer. Obviously missing the crowd, but you know, consistency is the key thing for them, isn't it? You know,
and you're going on earlier, sorry to interrupt you, you're going on earlier about Dundalk getting everything handed to them, getting them. Sligo Rovers players don't want for anything.
Yeah.
Everything is provided for them. They're really, really well looked after when they go down and sign and play there. As you said, the training ground, the pitch, everything. Fans love the place, love them. You look at the money that was raised in the lockdown, all that kind of stuff that kind of impacts the club. And this is where they should be. As I say, I don't think the standard's all that great in the league at the moment. Sligo Rovers should be challenging up for those European positions. John, am I right?
I think so, but I think Stewie touched on it there when he said consistency, because I watched, obviously, Sligo beat Waterford during the week as well, with the late Alex Cooper free kick.
And they were dreadful in the first
like,
half.
I'm watching the game. Sorry. but going back to the consistency, I can't believe the team that took apart Dundalk in the second half at the weekend. It's the same side that lost 3-0 to Cork City the week before.
Yeah.
It's chalk and cheese. But if they can keep De Vries, Coughlin and Junior now looks a good addition up front ticking. With the league being so tight, there's no reason they can't challenge for that European spot. I mean, look, the odds are now these days that, you know, one of your top 2 or 3 clubs is going to win the FAI Cup as well. Mm. So that 4th place, you know, is a road into Europe now. So they're well capable of challenging that.
Brilliant. I'm going to stay with you on this one, John, because I saw your tweet about the great Ollie Horgan yesterday. And of course, they had a brilliant result. They came back from 2-1 down. They came back from, they were behind twice in the game, but they scored 2 late goals to win the game and win 3-2, which was a great result. It was their first win since the opening night of the season and badly needed. And it keeps them in touch They moved them off the bottom of the table as well. But Ollie Horgan, what can we say, John? What can we say about the man?
Oh, he's gassy. Like, every silver lining has a cloud. You know, he's hilarious. But no, like he said yesterday after the game yesterday that he'd snap someone's hand off for the relegation playoff, and I think he probably would though at this stage. But I mean, I thought they were well worth the win against Waterford yesterday. Waterford started very, very well, and deserved to take the lead and probably deserved to go 2-1 up on them again. But the pressure Harps put on laid on, and Cogler's header to equalise, and it was funny that when they went 2-1 down, it was almost like Harps threw off the shackles a little bit and said, "Come on, we have to have a go for this." And when they did have a go, Waterford didn't know what to do with them. The pressure was just relentless. They thoroughly deserved the win in the end. But no, look, obviously their win puts Cork City bottom, so that there is that that side of it keeps me a bit disappointed. But I thought they were very good yesterday, and if they can maintain that second half performance through upcoming games, Cork City will be doing well to keep up with them.
Yeah, I was impressed with Finn Harps. We saw him earlier in the season, Shu. I liked what Ollie did in the off-season in terms of the recruitment. For whatever reason, since the lockdown, that really affected him, because they've come back a completely different team. Maybe this win will kickstart him. I do like Ollie. He's a great character. We need as many characters in the leagues. But sometimes I think he can be stigmatised as a little bit like that he's a character. He actually has an unbelievable work ethic, goes to all the games, scouts players, recruits players. I've heard stories going to Scotland, going here, there and everywhere. His car is almost like a mobile office, that he's just non-stop in the car and going off to watch players and do deals and all sorts of stuff. He just loves it. And sometimes I think that can be a little bit disrespectful at times. People just thinking, you know, that he plays up to the... I know he plays up a little bit and all that kind of stuff, and we like that. But he cares a lot. He really, really cares a lot, and he does a good job to keep them fighting, and they always seem to be fighting, but he keeps a good job in doing that as well. So it was a good win for them, and hopefully they can kick on from that as well, because it was badly needed. I'm going to move on to the First Division, and we'll just run through the results because I want to get to Stephen Kenny's squad. As I say, we've a lot to pack in tonight. I think we've done okay. We've packed in the majority. But Cab and Teeley suffered their first defeat, losing heavily to UCD. It was a great win for Andy Myler's team, winning 3-0. UCD keeps them in the hunt as well in fourth position. But they lost 3-0, Cab and Teeley to UCD. Wexford lost 3-0 to Drogheda. Moves Drogheda second. I said last week how Drogheda, I think, might win that league, and they're looking good at the moment. Galway drew 0-0 with Bray. Athlone went down to a heavy defeat. Despite Athlone are doing great at the moment. Athlone 0, Shamrock Rovers second team 4, and Cove, who actually are doing very well at the moment, and I know they had a streaming service for the game as well. I think you tuned into it, John, and I like the stuff that Cove are doing and stuff off the pitch as well. They're really trying their best there to be as progressive as possible, and that was a big win for them, beating Longford, because Longford would be considered one of the favourites for the First Division, so that moves them up to 6th in the table, 11 points, keeps them in touching distance. But it was a good win for Cove. A massive story in the First Division that people have probably overlooked at this stage, because so much has gone on in the last few days. But John Caulfield is back in management, Stewie. Unbelievable success with Dundalk. Everybody knows him from that, unbelievable success with Cork City, going toe-to-toe with Dundalk over the last number of years and creating that brilliant rivalry that we've loved. He's been out of the game since he finished up with Cork City, but he's after taking over at Galway United, and it's a massive coup for Galway. I know they have a big budget, I know they have big investors, but it's a big, big name and a big, big profile for that First Division.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. Yeah, obviously John comes with a lot of experience and having won an awful lot of stuff in the previous six, seven years. Obviously they've been Dundalk's greatest rivalry over that period of time. And he has, you know, he must take credit for the job that he done down there. And there's a good place you want to go play or trade. And obviously, Galway, when you talk about, you know, having an environment for a footballer.
Lovely ground, Terry.
Great
Park,
ground,
yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful surface, great pitch, lovely ground.
Well, I think they call it Eamon DC Park now, is it? It'll always be Terryland.
Terryland,
to me.
Yeah, Terryland Park. Not too sure about, again, you know, you talk about investors as well, and you know, the Galway investment kind of came in with a, you know, a bit of a there was a few news stories around it. All gone very, very quiet. Don't really know what really is going on.
Well, the Comer brothers are backing them now, so like there's big money involved.
They're the guys that write those comedy films.
John, I suppose from Cork City, obviously you're close to John Caulfield, the fact that he managed the club for so long. This is big news for Galway United, and they've had a dreadful start. They're sitting second bottom of that first division. Alan Murphy got the sack there, was it last week? They haven't won a game. They've drawn five, they've lost three. They're sitting on 5 points. So it's a big job for John Caulfield. But in terms of, I suppose, from the first division point of view and Galway themselves, it's a big coup for them getting John.
Oh yeah, it's massive, and I think he do a very good job there. I think when you look at Galway's squad, their position bears no relation to where they should be in the table. And they've got a great setup. Like I said, they've got good backing. They've got good support. I think even in terms of the Watch LOI streaming service, I think Galway were the first division club that bought the most subscriptions, even though they themselves weren't featured in it. So there's obviously a great hunger for the league in general, not just for the club. But John, look, whether it was at Cork City or Avondale or UCC before it, obviously, look, I've known John back from when he was a player as well. He's a winner, and he will get a huge amount out of that team. There's no doubt about it. He said himself today in the press launch that the Galway players will get used to him, that he's
very intense.
Intense.
I saw that myself, that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that the players will enjoy it, and I think they will. And I think he's going to do great work there. And I think it's probably too late to get them pushing up the table this season, but with someone like John Caulfield at the helm and the setup they have there, I think they're a shoe in for relegation, or sorry, for promotion. I've got to see for promotion next year. Like I just look, he's a winner, and he'll bring that mentality to Galway.
Yeah, and I think it's a mentality that they need, because for too long they've been in the doldrums. I'd love to see a good progressive Galway United back in the Premier Division or in whatever, I suppose, way the game is moving forward here, whatever avenue we're going down. But I'd love to see a good Galway. So we wish John really well, and we'll watch with kind of bated breath, see how he gets on. But the Irish team, Stephen Kenny, Stu, an old friend of yours. Still a friend. He's still all our friends. So I was really excited about this because it's been a long...
No friends in football, Alan.
It's been a long time coming. Are you not my friend?
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming for him to get the opportunity to name his first squad. And obviously he got that opportunity today. So people were tuned in from all angles, and there was a lot of kind of interest, as you would expect, on it. No major surprises, but I suppose from a League of Ireland point of view, there was no Jack Byrne and there was no Shawnee Maguire. I've no problem with that, because I think he's brought in the young lads that he's brought in is obviously Jason Malumbi, who I fully expected. Adam Ida. Troy Parrott might raise a few eyebrows because obviously he hasn't been playing, but he's gone on loan at Millwall, which I think is a good move for him. But I don't mind that, because I think he's integrating Troy into the setup from day one, because we know going forward he will be in it. Aaron Connolly is also one of the other younger lads that's in it. But I suppose just from the point of view of Jack not being in it, is that a disappointment, Stu, from our point of view?
It is, yeah. It certainly is, yeah. Not for a couple of reasons. Rovers are obviously riding high in the table at the moment, or not riding high, but at the top of the table. They're going into European football now as well. And Jack has been played very well this year. He's obviously fit as well. And not just take all that out of consideration, just how he's performed in the Irish setup, I think would certainly merit for me a call-up. So disappointed not to see him in it. I don't know what the reasoning would be there. I always think we need a player like that in the squad. I don't see from the current squad that we have somebody of that sort of pick-your-pocket type of ability. And he was, you know, Jack certainly merited his inclusion in the previous squads, and certainly from my point of view, played a huge role in a couple of very important games, and he was the difference as well. So he, you know, I think when you have a player like that, I think you should utilize him. Kind of surprised Stephen hasn't done that, but I don't know. I think this is the big leagues when it comes to the political stuff, like, you know, and Stephen has a certain management style and he's quite a unique character in his own sense, and he doesn't tend to get fazed by the politics and games, so only time will tell what kind of effect that will have on him and his decision making. But I suppose, considering it's the first squad, we shouldn't read. I mean, I think things are going to change. Obviously, when players get back playing, we see where they are, what kind of level they're at. And it would be the next squad, I think, would be the key one.
Yeah, and he's on the standby list, Jack. It's probably a disappointment for him, but I don't think you should lose hope, because Stephen will... These squads can change as well, obviously. It's only his first squad, so... I've no problem with the squad, I have to say. I'm really looking forward to it. John, was there any notable omissions that you felt should have been in, or how do you think, I suppose, the squad is shaping up at the moment? The fact that he's brought back James McCarthy and Harry Arthur as well, I think, is a really good thing. I think they have plenty to offer both of them, particularly that midfield area. But was there anyone sticking out for you, John, that maybe should have got in?
I think I'd be a little bit biased in it, but I think Seanan Maguire, it probably is a little bit hard done by. I know there was a bit of talk about Michael Obafemi, but I think Stephen Kinney himself addressed that quite straightforwardly in the press conference, that I think he's going to set up with a 4-3-3, and he doesn't think Obafemi is quite ready to do that, to play that role at senior international level. But I'm going to put on my Colombo hat again here for a second.
Oh, here we go, Colombo.
There you go. I know it wasn't touched on today, but I think Stephen Kinney might have done Shamrock Rovers a favour there, because if you look at the situation with COVID at the moment, there's obviously some dispensation for the Irish squad to come together, spend 2 days in Ireland, then fly out for the match during the week, and then come back together as a fixed unit for the Finland game at home. I think if Jack Byrne is in that international squad, he can play for Shamrock Rovers the next couple of weeks, because he'll have to self-isolate. So I would not be surprised if in a week's time it comes out that Jack Byrne would have been in that squad only for COVID, and that it might be a case that... Because I'd agree with Stewie. I don't see who in midfield fills the role that Jack Byrne can give you. So in my head, that's a situation where Stephen's gone. He knows the league well, and he said, look, Shamrock Rovers have European games coming up. Jack, we're playing Nations League games. I've cover. Rovers don't. And I think there might even have been a conversation there. I think Jack Byrne's omission is COVID-related, and not a reflection of him or the league of Ireland, to be honest.
Will we give John a round of applause? Oh, yeah.
Colombo.
He's on fire.
He is absolutely on fire, Colombo. The only thing I hope out of, that comes out of all this, that there's a picture of you tomorrow in a cream Mac like Colombo, that you actually have one, John.
I like Sherlock there, yeah.
Great stuff, John. I really enjoyed that. And who knows, that it's been a night of theories. We've all sorts of theories on all sorts of things. And obviously, John is like Columba. He's our detective as well. So it's been really good. Stewie, thanks a million. John, also thanks to you.
Lovely, Alan. Thanks for you.
And it's been a massive, and also massive thanks to our sponsors, Benetti Menswear. Our teams are in Europe, as we said. Derry City are playing tomorrow against FK Riteri. Bohemians on Thursday night against Fehervar. And Shamrock Rovers against Yves Tampere. We wish them all well. Hopefully there's positive results. And hopefully we have a little bit of a more quieter week than what we've had this week, because it's been absolutely bonkers in the league and Irish football. But that's what makes it what it is and why we love it. So talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.